You're listening to the Imperfect PCOS podcast, where we share no BS, science-backed strategies to put your PCOS into remission. I'm your host, Corey Ruth, aka the Women's Dietitian. Let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Imperfect PCOS podcast. We are joined today by Brooke Davis, who is a registered nurse, holistic nutritionist, certified women's health coach, and founder of Her Holistic Wellness. Her online platform caters to women seeking nutrition and lifestyle-based support for managing fibroids and period challenges. With over 14 years of expertise in women's health, Brooke helps women manage fibroids like a boss and eliminate problematic periods, all with tweaks in their kitchen and lifestyle. So cool. Thank you so much for coming on today, Brooke.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Corey.
Yeah. And by the way, anyone who's listening to the audio version of this, you need to turn on your video because I actually have my hair and makeup done. Usually my podcast record days, I'm like, I'm not getting ready today. I'm going to wear pajamas and look like a hot mess. So yeah, I feel like I'm all done up today.
You're gorgeous.
Put your video on, everyone. For the first and only time. So Brooke, welcome to the show. Please tell listeners a little bit about yourself, how you became a nurse, how you got into this field, what you do. Give us some deets about who you are. I would love for listeners to know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I pretty much knew from, I guess I would say ever since I was young that I wanted to be in the healthcare field. I actually initially wanted to be a pediatrician. And so that was, I focused on it first, but then I kind of realized, and I'm sure you guys know too, sometimes doctors can't spend a whole lot of time with their patients. Yes. And so as I kind of started to get more into, you know, getting close to graduation, I was like, I want to do something where I can actually spend more time and actually engage the patients and not kind of just be in and out. So I was like, I'll switch to being a, pediatric nurse instead of a pediatrician.
Yeah. Okay.
So that was my goal. Then I got to school and my women's health rotation and I was like, okay, never mind. I love kids, but yeah. I love women's health more. So that's essentially when the bug hit me as far as women's health. So I have worked, like you said, 14 years as a nurse. Most of those years have been in women's health.
Awesome.
So I have done gynecological surgery. I've done labor and delivery, postpartum, lots of, you know, women's health things. So that's, yeah, the whole gamut of women's health. And I, as I was kind of going through my own feminine health and hormone journey, and I'm sure we'll get to that in a second.
Oh, yes.
I was learning about things and just realized I was offering a lot of information to my patients that was ended up helping them. And they'd be like, you know, my doctor didn't tell me that. Or, you know, they come in for gynecological surgery and we talk about, you know, things that they could do nutrition wise. And they're like, man, nobody ever talked to me about this stuff. So as I was kind of healing myself and helping other patients, I kind of realized I wanted to do this more, you know, full time. So that's when I got certified as a health coach. And then I got certified in hormonal and menstrual health and also did my training in holistic nutrition. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to make this a thing.
Yes.
And then ended up creating Her Holistic Wellness, and the rest is history. So now I essentially work with clients, mostly one-on-one, and we do lots of work with just lifestyle strategies that can help to manage problematic periods and in particular fibroids.
Okay. I feel like I've heard fibroids, fibroids. I don't know which one is correct.
Either one.
That's wrong. I think it's so cool that you have this clinical background. I think that's so important, and it really makes you such a stronger provider because you can connect to patients on that different level. Like, actually, I have worked in, you know, that side of healthcare. Now I'm on this side, you know, because you saw a gap, you know, a need. So that is amazing. We're so, so grateful to have you and all of your wisdom today. I have to ask you, what was your favorite rotation when you were, within women's health, I should say, what was your favorite while you were kind of working through those different departments?
I would say I really loved antepartum and labor and delivery. So antepartum is basically when you come in and you're not quite ready to deliver, but there's some complications going on.
Okay.
So maybe you're there to prevent preterm labor, or maybe you have high blood pressure. So a lot of times, a lot of the patients would be there for you know, some time, and I got to really connect with them, so they would be there for a while. And then I love postpartum too, just because you get to play with the little babies.
Yeah. Right.
Who doesn't hold them and help with their first bath and all of that. So
oh my
that's
God.
Always awesome.
Like I would just
right?
Give her 24/7. Yes. Yeah. You know, it's, I love that you said that, because a lot of what I see in my practice is there's so much fear. There's so much fear and so many questions. And, you know, I work with women who have PCOS, and it's similar in this, you know, fear is fear. And if a woman is feeling fear, you know, before birth, because there might potentially be, or there already is some type of complication. And I'm sure you've been here too. I certainly have a million times where for whatever reason, the provider that I was in the room with was not able to lend any empathy, and that escalated my fear. So it's so amazing to have a provider in the room with you when you're in that fearful space. And I try to really, you know, I try to really exude this when I'm talking with patients and when I'm talking to program members, to really calm fears, because that goes so far. And I think everybody listening can probably resonate where they've had an experience where a provider has really been empathetic and really squashed some of that fear. And it's just been like the best feeling, like, oh, thank God, you know, and then we've had
absolutely
opposite experience. So I think it really says, it speaks volumes about, you know, you as a provider, you know, you're able to really, that's a time and a space where you feel like you've been able to have a good experience as a healthcare provider in that really vulnerable, you know, delicate space and phase of life, short phase, but yeah.
Absolutely. I always say women's health is so personal and particular, and we deal with a lot of sensitive topics, and empathy is so important. And I always say bedside manner with like any provider, I feel like is, I don't care if it's the dentist, if it's an eye doctor, you know, I just really having that bedside manner, I think is so important, and it goes a long way. You're absolutely right.
It's so true. It's so true. So tell us what if we, I really want to center this conversation, as you know, around fibroids, fibroids. Tell us what those are. What, if you could define them for a listener, if someone's had them or maybe thinks maybe they might have them, or they are relatively common, what are they? What are the causes behind them? Just like a little bit about that, what that particular issue could be for women.
Yeah, for sure. So fibroids are essentially benign, so non-cancerous tumors that are in or around the uterus. So nine times out of 10, 99.999% of the time, they are non-cancerous.
Yes.
So typically, if somebody does find out that they have those, it's, you know, typically not a cancer diagnosis, but they can be either within the uterine wall. There's multiple types of fibroids.
Oh.
There's some that actually are within the wall of the uterus. There's some that are outside the uterus. There are some that are just beneath the lining of the uterus. And then there are actually some that kind of sit on like a stalk and kind of are elevated in the uterus.
Yes.
So where the fibroid is, how many you have, and where they're located and the size will often determine if and what type of symptoms you may have.
Oh.
So some people have really tiny fibroids and they have no idea.
Mm.
Oftentimes they can be the size of a pea, so
okay.
Super tiny, all the way up to the size of like a melon.
Wow.
So,
okay.
So huge range of size, and you can have one or numerous.
Mm.
So some people may have one or tiny ones, they don't know.
Okay.
Other people may have really large ones, and it could cause symptoms like heavy and painful periods. It's
okay.
One of the flagship ones.
Okay.
Some people have bleeding in between periods.
Okay.
Depending on if they are maybe pressing on the back, some people get lower back pain,
okay.
Or even problems with going to the bathroom. So bladder, bowel, sometimes it can be pressure.
Okay. Okay.
And with sex. So
yeah.
A lot of times those symptoms can kind of, and sometimes they can mimic other conditions too.
I was just saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yes. Sometimes it's a little bit of investigation, but sometimes providers find them incidentally on like a pelvic exam when you go for your annual. They may feel and they can tell your uterus is a little more enlarged.
Right.
Other times they may be super tiny and you might see them on like a pelvic ultrasound. Some women find out they actually have them when they go for a pregnancy ultrasound and, you know, they go and they're going to, you know, have a baby checkup and then they go, oh, you have a little fibroid in there. So, right. And so there's, and you'll probably hear if you were to look up, you know, what causes fibroids?
Yeah.
It's still, and this is tricky because there's a lot that we don't know, but there's a lot that we do know. Okay. Sometimes I feel like, starting to get a little overdone when people say, oh, well, we don't always know what causes fibroids. There's a lot of things we're learning now that really paint a picture. Yeah. So, much of fibroid development is really focused on, hormones, in particular, estrogen can really feed your growth.
Okay.
And inflammation. Those are the two biggest things. So there's two big things you want to remember about fibroid development. Okay. Estrogen, in particular, can feed their growth and then also inflammation as well.
Okay.
And so there's quite a few, and we can get into it whenever you're ready. Just some of the research back kind of things that may make it more likely for you to get fibroids or things that might make somebody more susceptible to getting fibroids.
Yeah, I would love to know that. And first, really quickly, going back to the pregnancy piece, I can imagine if a lot of these are maybe influenced by estrogen, do you see them more common in pregnancy because of that heavy load of estrogen that we are, you know, kind of carrying or, you know, pumped with?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So some people actually find out the first time that they have fibroids is actually during pregnancy, or some that may have been really small tend to grow in pregnancy. And I'll tell you about my story because I actually had that happen to me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So in particular, when you're pregnant, you're in that excess of progesterone and estrogen, and those elevated hormones really feed fibroid growth. So some people don't have fibroid growth when they're pregnant, but a lot of people do.
Okay.
Or they may find out they have it the first time when they're pregnant.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I definitely, I want to, that kind of goes back to a question that I always do this. I like jump around, I forgot to ask in particular why you decided to specialize in fibroids. What brought you into that space within women's health? Does this feed into the story of the pregnancy ultrasound?
It does. So okay. I actually, while I was, you know, a nurse in my early years, I was going through my own kind of, you know, period issues. I would get horrible PMS, horrible painful cycles. I would get ovarian cysts a lot.
Okay.
And those would come up and they would take months to go away. I was in a lot of pain. Some birth control to help with that. And we know a lot about birth control only masks a lot of the issues, and ended up having some complications from birth control. My blood pressure skyrocketed on it.
Oh, gosh.
Due to the estrogen in the pill. So I had to get off of that. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, here I am with, you know, hormonal acne, heavy painful periods, ovarian cysts, PMS, like I need to do something that's going to help.
Yeah.
Then I found out that I had a fibroid and I was petrified because I was in my late 20s at the time.
Oh.
So I was like, okay, this is something that usually affects women in their 30s and 40s and beyond. My mom had a fibroid and had to have a hysterectomy.
My
grandmother had endometriosis and a fibroid. And so it was, you know, really common in my family. And all I kept thinking about is, you know, I don't even have kids yet. I'm not even thinking about having kids yet. I've got this fibroid. Like I was like terrified.
Yes.
And so that's kind of what started my quest for like, okay, you know, birth control didn't help. I've got to really get on it. So that's when I really just kind of dove into the research and obviously did, you know, a lot of my clinical training and subsequent certifications. And I learned super helpful strategies. I was able to just transform my cycle in general. You know, it was like clockwork, no issues. My skin cleared up. I was able to shrink my fibroid. I think the smallest it got down to 2 centimeters, which is, you know, pretty tiny. I wasn't having any symptoms with it at that point.
Yeah.
And then when I got pregnant, and we can get into that, I ended up actually, fibroid was super tiny. But when I got pregnant, you know, met my husband, got pregnant later on, the fibroid grew tremendously and I ended up miscarrying.
So sorry.
14 weeks. It was terrible.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it was 2 centimeters at the time. My doctor's like, oh yeah, the fibroid's really small. So, it shouldn't be affected. He was like, if anything, it may grow just a bit with the, the pregnancy, but you got it really small, so you should be fine. Well, it started to grow. And I actually went, you know how you can go for like those early sneak peek ultrasounds if you want to like look at the baby early.
Right.
So my husband and I just turned 14 weeks and I had made an appointment and we were going to go find out the gender early and everything. And I get in the ultrasound room and I could tell the ultrasound technician just looked really kind of freaked out by her face. So I'm kind of laying on the bed like, okay, like what's going on, And she's like, hold on a minute. She's kind of, she has the ultrasound probe and she's kind of trying to, and she goes, okay, can you go pee a minute and come back? So I guess she thought she saw something pressing on the baby, but I think she thought it was my bladder.
Oh my gosh.
So she said, go ahead and go pee and come back. So I went to go pee in the bathroom and I'm kind of like, obviously like, okay, what's wrong, And so I come back and she's like, I don't see a heartbeat. So as you can imagine, it was just the worst day, and it was a Friday. So, I couldn't get a hold of my OB-GYN, So they were like, if you start bleeding, just go to the ER. But if not, you just have to call your doctor on Monday. So I was like, yeah. So
the end ever.
Yeah. So to go, I was just about to say that, to go through the weekend with all these questions. And then long story short, I went to my doctor Monday. He confirmed that I had the, miscarriage and that it was because the fibroid had grew so large that it had essentially pushed the baby out of the amniotic sac and kind of just stole all the blood flow, essentially.
Wow.
So I had to have an emergency DNC, which for those that don't know, it's just you have to actually remove the pregnancy. And they went ahead and did a myomectomy, which is the surgical removal of the fibroid, but you keep the uterus intact.
Okay.
So no hysterectomy. So I had to have that, both of those things done. And it was a lot just because I worked so hard to, get the fibroid small and keep it from growing. And I had gotten pregnant with no issue. And then, boom, because all those hormones.
Yeah.
As you said, when you're pregnant, you're in that high hormone state and that tends to, it can feed fibroids. So, I've had to take some time to, heal after surgery and was quite depressed, I would say, for a little bit after that. I felt like as I was recovering, like everybody I knew was getting pregnant. So, it's hard to see,
of course,
after a miscarriage and then you see a lot of friends or people at work, I would see they were, getting pregnant and I'm healing and not really sure, like, is it going to be easy to get pregnant after the myomectomy? Because sometimes you do hear people have scar tissue and things that can form. And so I was really worried. But after some time, I was like, you know what? I know the strategies that I was able to utilize that helped this fibroid to shrink and keep it from growing. Now that my fibroid is gone, I can utilize those same strategies to try to prevent it from, from coming back. And I was able to get pregnant with my daughter and then my son 2 years later. And thankfully, I'm still fibroid free. It's been like 6 years now. So
great. Oh my gosh, what a story. I love that you really were able to turn this are into a way to help others. That's just amazing. And I'm
thank you so
proud of what you went through. That's so much.
Thank you. Yeah, it was definitely tough, but so glad to come out on the other side. And I think one of the reasons why I do what I do too, is because I had so many, I think, red flags in early on with my periods being how they were and getting cysts and a lot of those same issues that I was having, fibroids can be connected to. So I always kind of say if my work can help people when they're in those maybe red flag stages, I would love to try to prevent people from going through what I went through.
Absolutely. Yes. I say that all the time. So I did want to touch on, can fibroids impact fertility, and pregnancy, but I think we've established yes, to that question.
Right.
What about, you mentioned risk factors. Is there anything that somebody can do to I guess stepping back, my first question would be, what are associated risk factors? Potentially, we talked about estrogen and inflammation. But my second question would be, is there anything that we can do to 100% avoid something like a fibroid?
That's a good question. So definitely there are absolutely things that you can do to 100% put yourself in the best position to try to prevent fibroids.
Okay.
Is it possible for everybody across the board in every situation to prevent fibroids? Maybe not, but you can do so many things to reduce your chances. And I love focusing on that because I know sometimes people hear some of the risk factors, like genetics is one, you know, like right. I mentioned, you know, my mother, my grandmother, my yeah. sister, typically if you have a relative that has had fibroids, it puts you at much higher risk.
Okay.
In particular, being a Black woman, we are up to 3 times more likely to get fibroids. So sometimes people hear some of the non-modifiable risk factors.
Right.
I almost kind of feel a loss of power, like, oh man, well, I'm just kind of destined to have this happen. And
right.
I always try to tell people, I'm like, yeah, there are some risk factors that we can't change. Like, I can't change the fact that, you know, my mom and grandmother and, right. you know, aunts all had hysterectomies because of fibroids. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a Black woman. I am at higher risk, but there are so many things that can, you know, go into it. There's other things that they say research has shown that may put people at higher risk. Like in particular, they say women who start their periods earlier in life, like say before 10 or 11, they say that there's been some research that could contribute or make you at higher risk. And a lot of that they say is mainly just because you have a longer time of menstruation and it's a lot more time being having that estrogen and that hormone influence. Mm-hmm. So, there's also some research that suggests that women, the more kids you have, almost the lower your risk factor. And that could also be similar to the more times you're pregnant, you know, even though your hormones are high during pregnancy, there's a period where you don't have your period. Some women are breastfeeding for a while and may not have a period for sometimes up to 18 months to 2 years, you know, after having a baby.
Yes.
So your hormones are lower in that time period. So over the course of a woman's menstruation years, you may have less estrogen impact.
Interesting.
There's also a lot of research specifically on diet. They say that in particular, eating lots of vegetables and fruits, and in particular, citrus fruits. Though there's been research that's shown that women in that category have less risk for fibroids.
Very cool.
Yeah, so there are quite a few things. High blood pressure is a big one, and they're actually just talking about how much more they're realizing how there's a connection between women that have higher blood pressure and also the likelihood of having fibroids. So I always tell people, if you do have, you know, higher blood pressure, making sure to work with your provider to kind of get that managed, because that can be a huge risk factor. Vitamin D is another one.
Vitamin D.
And you know, vitamin D deficiency is so common, but, they did a recent study, and it's been a big topic. I feel like lately, but the group that had, lower vitamin D levels were 32% more likely to have fibroids. And that's a pretty decent percent.
And
if you're supplementing and you are low, it could help to shrink the fibroids.
Wow.
Yeah.
Such a small thing you can do, just to take a vitamin D supplement, especially in the winter, or get outside in the summer.
Exactly. Yeah. So making sure, if you having your vitamin D levels checked, if you are low, definitely trying to get that brought back up. That alone can be hugely helpful.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I always tell women, you know, one of the best things you can do, especially as we get older, is to talk to, if we can, you know, our moms, our aunts, our grandmas, and get a good understanding of what their health history looks like. Like I've been probing my mom the last few years. Like, so, okay, remind me, how great grandma, what cancer did she have? You know, it's so important to know these things, especially when it comes to things that are so genetically influenced, and PCOS can be as well. There's some research on playing a role, as well as high blood pressure, which you mentioned.
Oh, wow. Okay. See,
it's just a good idea to get as good of an understanding as far as, you know, the close women relatives that you have, what does their health look like? And also for fertility and pregnancy too. I always say, ask your mom, if you can, ask your mom how her pregnancy was. Were there any complications? Yep. Did she have gestational diabetes? I mean, there's just so many things that we can see similarities with. So yeah, always, always a good idea.
Absolutely.
So what about, I would love to dive more into the diet and nutrition side of things, obviously food nerd over here. You mentioned, I mean, it's fruits and vegetables. Like, I don't know what can't they do? They're so important for every aspect of our health, but I think it's so fascinating that citrus fruits in particular are helpful when it comes to fibroid growth. Are there other like standout foods that you have found and have seen to be particularly helpful for like prevention and treatment? You mentioned vitamin D. Are there any other foods that are like superstars?
There's no way around it. PCOS is complex and multifaceted. What we know about it, including how best to treat it, is constantly changing. That's why I've dedicated my life's work to helping women put their PCOS into remission. Inside my signature program, the PCOS Boss Academy, women lose weight permanently without restriction and master their most stubborn PCOS symptoms. If you're looking to get pregnant or want to be a mom in the future, my ultra successful Get Pregnant with PCOS program supports moms-to-be every step of the way in conquering PCOS symptoms and bringing home the baby of their dreams. Plus, there's an additional weight loss mode to check into. These are all of the science-backed nutrition and lifestyle tweaks you need to improve your PCOS and change your life from a qualified healthcare provider and leading PCOS expert in the field. Ultimately, we are in control of our PCOS, and I would love to work with you inside one of my upcoming programs so you can step into the best version of yourself and start feeling like you again.
Absolutely. So one group of foods in particular that's really helpful is cruciferous veggies. They are super helpful. So you got your broccoli, you got your cauliflower, your Brussels sprouts, your Swiss chard, your kale. Those are just some examples. That class of vegetables can actually help your liver to process estrogen. So just a big thing, obviously, about fibroids is the estrogen. And so a lot of times the two big ways that estrogen can really affect fibroids is either estrogen coming out, so external estrogens, things that can kind of mimic estrogen in your body, yeah, and then how well your body can actually get rid of the estrogen that it no longer needs to utilize. So our liver is a huge part of that web of processing estrogen and getting it out of our body. So supporting your liver is huge. And so cruciferous vegetables are one great way to do that. So I usually recommend, you know, trying to get them in. If you can get it, at least one of them in a day, at least, you know what I mean? I'm like, you know, load up on broccoli or cauliflower, you know, that would be super helpful. Healthy fats are also really, really helpful. So healthy fats like, you know, salmon, olive oil, avocado, your nuts and seeds, those really help because they can help to reduce inflammation. Mm-hmm. And inflammation is really big when it comes to fibroids because inflammation in the body and inflammation, acute inflammation or inflammation when you have an injury or an infection is a normal bodily process. You know, it happens. If you cut your finger will get red and warm and probably, you know, swell. And that's just because your body is healing it. But when we have low level chronic inflammation in the body, it sets a lot of hormonal and other processes in our body that can actually stimulate fibroid growth. There's even some research that inflammation can cause cells to quickly reproduce, and it could actually make tissues kind of stick together, which is fibroids or smooth muscle kind of, you know, mass. Yes. So reducing inflammation is so helpful. So getting in those healthy fats can really, really be helpful as well. There's a lot of question about, you know, can I eat meat? Do I have to go vegan? Right. You know, can I? Oh, okay. Well, look, that too. Yeah. But like, you know, can I eat meat? You know, do I have to go vegan or vegetarian? And that's a super good question. So there is some research that does mention in particular that there could be association with red meat and higher meat intake and higher likelihood of fibroids versus women that are, you know, do more, you know, vegetables and fruit. But that doesn't mean that you have to go completely vegetarian or vegetarian or vegan. Right. I think it's important to note that, you know, plants should be make up a large portion of our diet. That's just healthy across the board. Right. But oftentimes with fibroids, if you're going to eat meat, just choosing, if you can, the right type, like organic options is so helpful.
Yeah.
Just because a lot of our conventional meats are filled with, you know, hormones and antibiotics. They, you know, give them growth hormones and those hormones get digested and then they affect our hormones too.
Right.
And so if you already have fibroids and you're trying to either prevent them or you're trying to shrink them, all that estrogen from the meat can really make it difficult because you're kind of putting yourself in more of an estrogen overload state. So I always say, if you can, if you're going to eat meat, you know, try to make it more of a side dish, as I always say, you know, have like your vegetables, maybe put your meat, you know, on top of your salad or things like that. And then also to just try to get organic grass-fed pasture raised if you can. I know inflation is crazy, so.
Oh yeah,
I know everything is expensive. So I know sometimes, you know, it's maybe hard to eat organic all the time, but if you can, it's very helpful.
Yeah, I love that. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no. Yeah. I was just going to say, those are the big ones, the cruciferous vegetables. And then of course, healthy fats. And then just some of the other things I typically recommend are just getting, a good amount of protein. In your diet, protein just helps to stabilize your blood sugar. It helps to keep you feeling fuller. Protein is like the building block for our cells in general. So it's super important. But that helps, you know, your hormones, and that'll help with keeping your hormones stable, which is important when you're trying to prevent fibroids. And then definitely lowering sugar intake. That's big.
Yes.
Dreaded sugar.
Yes.
Anything that's going to lower inflammation. So green tea in particular, I tell people, even though it has a little bit of caffeine in it, green tea has chemicals in it that can actually help to lower inflammation and estrogen.
Yes.
And like turmeric's another one, a spice that you can use to help with inflammation as well.
Yes. I love all of those. Oh my gosh. That was awesome. Thank you. That was like an abundance of info. I'm sure listeners are like, notes. Awesome. The last diet thing I wanted to ask about was the soy question. You know, so I get questions almost every day in my DMs. Can I have soy? I heard it's bad for my hormones. What is your take on soy for something like fibroids?
Very good question. So I typically, the type of soy and the frequency definitely matters. So in some cases, soy, especially like organic, non-genetically modified soy in particular, sometimes it can be helpful because it can bind to those estrogen receptors and it's going to be a weaker estrogen than, let's just say, an external estrogen or estrogen in your body. So it can almost kind of have an opposite effect where it can prevent estrogen from being too high. But it's really important to get the right type of estrogen, soy. And I always say you don't want to overload it.
Yes.
So, and, you know, like there's a lot of soy in like,
dogs and
exactly. Or like imitation meats. How many times that you turn like the back of the label on food and you see soybean oil, you know, those type of soys can make fibroids worse.
Okay.
But if you're getting like the organic, soy, and then, you know, there's certain types of foods that you might eat, that can mimic estrogen, like plant-based foods, but it can be helpful because it actually kind of weakens some of that estrogenic effect in your body. So
cool.
I wouldn't necessarily say that you need to be afraid of soy, but I think you do need to be cautious with the type. And like I said, how frequent.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. That honestly, that's the same answer for PCOS too.
It's
such a big difference between, you know, organic edamame in the pod or even whatever versus something like a vegan soy, modified soy, blah, 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 with like a 85, you know, mile long ingredient list, hot dog thing. There's such a huge difference.
Exactly.
Right. So yeah, we can't say that they're even similar. I mean, and both of them are technically soy products. So yeah, thank you for clarifying that. What about, sure. Yeah, and gut health. Is there a connection between gut health that you've seen or any research there as far as fibroids? And like, I've seen so much cool stuff on, you know, our microbiome and how certain gut bacteria can influence so many things, including our hormones and even our mood and our weight. Is there anything you've seen as far as a connection there?
Absolutely. Gut is probably one of the, aside from blood sugar, I would say gut is probably one of the top things that should be addressed if you want to, if you want to manage fibroids naturally. Okay. You're absolutely right. So in particular with the microbiome, there's good organisms that help us and then there's not so good organisms. And so there's actually a subset of organisms that helps to regulate estrogen. It helps our body to, after estrogen does its thing and exerts all its lovely effects, you know, it goes to the liver, gets processed, and then it goes to, you know, the gut, and then we need to poop it out basically.
Yes.
So the subset of organisms in the gut actually help to metabolize estrogen, but your gut microbiome is off, you may not have enough of those guys that help to process estrogen. So that could actually make estrogen that should be eliminated get reabsorbed back in the body and re-exert its effect. And then you've got more estrogen and then fibroids love estrogen. So it's super important to have a good balanced microbiome because it really not only, like you said, it affects our mood, our immune system, but our weight, but definitely also affects fibroids. Oh. And then I mentioned pooping. That's another thing.
Make sure you're pooping.
I know, if you're not pooping every day, that's a really big one because that's one of the, you know, how we, one of the ways that we eliminate estrogen. And so if we're not pooping every day because we're constipated or just, you know, not regular, that can definitely contribute to more estrogen recirculating back in the body. And then also too, our gut can just house a lot of inflammation, you know, and again, we talked about inflammation and fibroids being so connected. So gut is crucial and our diet plays a big factor in the gut. You know, when we feed it lots of fiber and lots of whole foods, it really just kind of sets the tone for a nice balanced microbiome. But if we're eating lots of sugar and lots of other inflammatory foods, it kind of starves our good bacteria. And so, you know, the good bacteria is like, okay, I'm not getting no food, so I can't, I can't help your estrogen.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I'm starving over here.
Exactly.
It's so interesting to talk so much about the connection between diet and estrogen because, you know, in PCOS, we don't focus a whole lot on estrogen. It's not such a driving force for most of our, you know, symptoms and what we're experiencing. But I remember working when I was just starting out as a dietitian, and actually even before I graduated, I was interning for an oncology dietitian who focused pretty much exclusively on breast cancer. And I learned so much about estrogen and its role in things like, you know, breast cancer and the connection between estrogen and diet. And I never, before I worked there, never even thought that what we eat could impact our hormone, estrogen. Like, what a wild concept. Now it's like an everyday thing I think about.
Right.
But when I first heard it, I was like, what? Because, you know, when you're young, you think of estrogen. When you think of estrogen, you think of like the pill. So
Exactly.
Unfortunately. So thank you for shedding more light on that. And the fiber connection, I remember learning, just a ton about fiber and cancer and, you know, estrogen and all of that. So it's really important. And so many Americans are fiber deficient.
Yes.
We do not eat enough fiber. So if that's something where you're like, I don't even know, like what, if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't even know really what foods have fiber and if I'm getting enough, you can, one of the things I recommend is just downloading a free app. Like, what's this, the other one I started downloading? One is MyFitnessPal, obviously that's a big one.
Yeah.
Carb Manager. I can't remember the last name. Carb Manager is another good one. It's a free tracking tool. And if you just track, I know tracking is no one's fave thing to do in the entire world, but honestly, track for even a week or 2 weeks would be ideal just to get a sense of what your diet looks like composition-wise, it will give you so much insight into the state of your health and the future of your health. Like just looking at your fiber grams per day, your protein, yes, your carbs, your sugar. I mean, it is really fascinating because so many of us underestimate how many carbs and how much sugar we're eating, and we overestimate how much fiber and protein that we're getting. So if that resonates with you, if you're interested in that, those apps are free, MyFitnessPal and Carb Balance, and you should totally check them out just to track and see where you're at, you know, fiber wise. And then that will, of course, you know, tell you what your blood sugar might be looking like as well. So what about, I was looking through your Instagram page is awesome, and it has so much good stuff on there.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Can you go more into the hormone balance hierarchy? You talked a little bit about that on one of your posts, and I would love to discuss kind of basic habits that you talked about, nutrition, supplements. Like, what are some of those? How would you describe that for listeners?
Absolutely. So I always say that, you know, sometimes it's easy when you're trying to manage, you know, your reproductive health naturally, or even just any condition. It's common to want to like, jump to like, what supplements can I take? Or, you know, what like can I, and I know I did this, you know, when I found out I had a fibroid, I went on like websites and spent hundreds of dollars just, you know, just trying to load myself up with stuff that I heard would help. Mm. And there were so many things that like, I was like skipping, like wasn't, you know, like basic things. Like I was super stressed out. I was, you know, caffeine, you know, probably doing a little too many happy hours with my margaritas with my friends. Like, you know, I wasn't, you know, spending a whole lot of time outdoors and getting sunlight. So I always say like, sometimes we skip to that top, like what can I take to fix this? And sometimes it's like, we may overlook some of the basics. Are you getting sunlight? Are you taking some time to de-stress, deep breathe if you feel stressed? Right. Do you spend time with people you enjoy spending time with? Do you, you know, do you have a good balance of, you know, work and family and just so many things, you know, exercise, just drinking enough water, sleeping is huge, you know? And I used to work night shifts, so my sleeping was like terrible.
Gosh.
So, you know, those basic habits, right? Those basic habits are super important. And then like the next layer up would be like, you know, kind of like we're talking about too, the nutrition piece and all of these like strategic things that we can put in place to kind of tailor it to what we need.
Yes.
And then at that top part of the pyramid, I'm kind of looking at this as a pyramid. Then that top part is like more of your fine tuning or like your superchargers, as I like to say. So like your supplements that are targeted. And I love supplements. Like if you go in my medicine cabinet, I've got like a million supplements. So I'm all about.
Yeah.
So look, yeah. So I'm all about supplements. So there's definitely a place for supplements. And, but I always tell people, try to remember supplements work best when they're working with you in addition to what you're already doing, as opposed to like, I'm going to pop all these pills to try to like get rid of my fibroid, but then I'm still eating inflammatory foods and I'm still super stressed and I'm not sleeping and I'm drinking tons of caffeine to get up and drinking wine to go to sleep. You know what I mean? And, you know, sometimes they're like, these supplements aren't working. You know, like I've had clients who are like, look, like I'm taking all this, I'm taking DIM and I'm taking this and I'm taking that and, you know, all these things and it's not helping. And then we kind of like get under the hood and they're like, well, I'm not really sleeping that great. And I'm really stressed out. And, you know, my diet could be a little better. I may be surviving on fast food a little bit right now, you know, so I just always just try to say, you know, just kind of start your basics because let's just be honest. Sometimes lifestyle changes can be overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
And especially when you're starting out and I'm all about just one step at a time, you know, baby steps. They really are cumulative and they add up.
Love it. If
you're ever feeling overwhelmed and you're just like, I don't know where to start. Just start with the basics,
yes.
You know, movement, water, sleep, stress, you know, and then we can work our way up. And if you need some support along the way, you know, obviously get that. And then, that can really make a big difference.
Totally. I love that you're saying this. It's so true. I probably mentioned this on another episode, but every time I post about something that's like, you know, five best pieces of advice to, you know, whatever it is, to improve facial hair growth for women with PCOS. And I have like four super solid recommendations that are like evidence-backed, like, I mean, good stuff. And then the last one is a supplement. I have 250 comments on the supplement. It's so funny. And I'm like, okay, guys, like, no, like that was the, that's the cherry on top of everything else that you can be doing to make traction. So it's so true.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yes. And I wanted to say too, really quickly, what's something that's interesting, this is not related to fibroids, but you mentioned night shifts. I think it's really interesting. So many women who, oh, bless you. So many. Sorry. Oh, you're fine. That was a silent.
Right.
So many women who take my programs and who have been one-on-one clients, they are nurses. And it's interesting to see, and also teachers, that's like the second most common profession of women who really need hormonal help. And I don't think that's a coincidence. Nurses have such high stress, high demand jobs, and they're working all hours of the night. I mean, I have the utmost respect for what y'all do. And I really,
thank you.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence that they come to
you. You are so right.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and then it's like when we're at work, sometimes we're not eating lunch and
yeah,
you got your patients and you're rushing from patient to patient and you're stressed out and you're, like you said, night shift, it our hormones can be a wreck.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That whole melatonin thing is a separate story, but, I would love for you to let listeners know, Brooke, how they can find you, how you work with clients, a little bit about if you have, you know, if you do one-on-one or programs or anything that you'd like to share so that listeners can find you. You have so much wisdom in this space and so many people can benefit from it.
Absolutely. Thank you. So yeah, you can definitely find me on Instagram at her.holistic.wellness. And then I have a class today. You can also go to my website, www.herholisticwellness.com.
Awesome.
I actually right now have my program, The Fundamental Fibroid Formula.
Awesome.
And I work, so I have, it's a two-pronged approach. I work with clients. It's an online program, but you also get one-on-one support as well.
Best of all.
So I find that with fibroids in particular, it can be a lot of variations of what type of fibroid, where is it located, how many. Are you trying to get pregnant? Are you trying to avoid surgery? Did you have surgery, but you're trying to prevent them? There's so many different places that you could be. Right. And I found over time that having that one-on-one support really tends to help clients because they can, things more tailored to them. So there's the online platform that you get access to in the program, which has a lot of the standard things from fibroids and then also the one-on-one support so we can kind of fine-tune things to where you are. And it's really good for anyone, whatever side of the fibroid spectrum you're on, whether you're trying to prevent them, whether you have them and want to try to shrink them, or if you're someone who maybe is going to have surgery or already had surgery and you want to try to prevent them from coming back. Because that is one thing that if you have a myomectomy, for instance, they take out the fibroid, not the uterus. And so as we know, root cause is so important because if you don't address the root cause, things can resurface. So one of the things I tell people, I'm like, you know, if for whatever reason you have to undergo surgery, that's okay, but definitely try to learn these strategies so that you don't have to go through all that again. Right. You know, so I have an application on my website at herholisticwellness.com. And you can apply for that. And then I usually just schedule a free call where we can just make sure the program is a good fit.
Perfect. Oh, what a great resource. That's so cool. Oh,
thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Brooke. I really appreciate your time. And I will drop all of those links into the show notes so listeners can easily find you and potentially work with you.
Thank you so much, Corey. I appreciate it. I'm so happy to be here with you today and all your listeners.
Yes. Thank you so much. All right. Have a good one, everybody.
If you like this episode, don't forget to review my podcast on Apple Podcasts. It's what keeps me running. Thanks for listening to the Imperfect PCOS Podcast.